What's up, everybody? It's Boog Sciambi, new voice of the Cubs. Just wanted to welcome you all back. It's great to have you all in the ballpark, live and in person this year. You know, when I think about all the things that make this gig special, it's the connection with everybody that's at the ballpark. So glad to have you back. I hope everybody's well. Go Cubs. And I look forward to talking to all of you and meeting all y'all this year.
All right, everybody. Hello, hello, and welcome to the Mistaken Identity Podcast, a very cold version of one. I am Frank, and I'm joined today by David. How are you doing in the weather today?
I'm doing fantastic. I'm excited for opening day. But as you know, every week before the season starts, we have 50, 60, 70 degree weather, and then opening day it drops to 35, 40. So I'm not looking forward to that. It's going to be really cold, especially by the lakefront. They're expecting some possible lake effect snow. So we just got to bundle up. I'm excited. We haven't been there in over a year. So super excited to get back regardless of the weather. How you doing, my friend?
So I'm on a different boat than you. You're insisting that because we haven't worked in a year, we should be grateful to be out in the cold tomorrow. And I see it differently.
Well, hey, I mean, it's been a rough year for all of us. COVID has like really just affected all of us. I mean, nobody's immune from anything happening. I'm sure everybody knows someone that's been affected by COVID. So it's just been a rough year. So normally I would be excited to be freezing my butt off, but tomorrow I'll be super excited. I'm looking forward to it.
Right, but the difference between me and you is that I'm barely 150 pounds. So when you put that into the by the lake at Wrigley Field, with the way the wind goes around those tunnels, it's hard for me to be. I'm going to be happy and energetic, and but on the inside, I'm going to be dying. So.
Well, I'm 151 pounds, so I mean, there's not much of a drop off. You know what I mean? So
no, you're 151 pounds. Okay. Well, let me ask you this though. Let me ask you this, because we've been around since the '90s working for Wrigley Field, so we've had many opening days. We've also had many different types of uniforms over the years. So, what was your favorite uniform color or combination that we've had since you've been with the Wrigley Field? I'm going to tell you mine. See if it's the same thing or not.
Wow. I probably would go with maybe the ones we recently got with the gray pants and the blue shirt. I think that was the best one we had. We had one back in 98 that was somewhat decent. It was like a blue shirt, you know, with the crowd control. You were Usher back then, so I think you had like white and blue and all that. Bozo the Clown looking colors, but we had blue and then the khaki pants. That was pretty decent with the blue jacket. But the most recent ones from 2017 wasn't bad either. The maroon ones. After you guys won, I wasn't there for the championship season, which sucks. You kept asking me to come back and I didn't, which now I regret it. But those maroons were pretty cool too. What's your favorite?
Well, you mentioned my worst, though. That was when we had to wear the red vest, the blue tie, and the blue pants. Like, we walked around like Bozo from WGN. You were asking me, right. It was crazy. Those were the worst. But my favorite actually was the green, white, and gray. We had a green, white, and gray uniform set one season. That was my favorite of all time. It had an all-white jacket. I thought that was pretty cool.
What year was that?
I'm in my 40s now, so I don't remember those. They all blurred together. When we had the obvious shirt guy, and he brought up, he asked us, what year did Derek Lee play? Or what year did Mark Grace play? I don't know. To me, they all played the same year. I don't remember what year it was.
They were there around the same time. So that had to be
97? I don't know what year it was. People say, so Frank, what year was it that Kerry Wood struck out 20? I can tell you that probably, but you know, as far as what happened between 1990 and 2021, it's all a blur. I feel like Rizzo and Derek Lee were on the same team.
I know, right?
All together. Because at the convention, we see them all at the convention. They're all together.
True.
Yeah. And Derek Lee looks like he can still play. Like, Derek Lee looks like he can still play.
Yeah, you know what? Actually, we got him after he kicked our tail when he was in Florida.
Yeah.
So we didn't get him until after we lost in 2003, I believe.
Right.
He was there later than the other guys.
Now, you didn't know this. You knew that we were going to have Willie Stargell's family here. But you didn't know that we were going to bring Sarah back. Now, Sarah had to hold, as you know, all our staff going crazy over that cooking popcorn discussion all over social media. Everybody. And, of course, I made it worse by passing everywhere. But everybody was talking about how Sarah Matlock, when I asked her if she can cook, and she said, does popcorn count? Everybody. People thought that was the funniest thing ever. So, of course, we have brought her back. Now, before we bring the ladies on, let me ask you this question, and then I want to ask them. This is a very controversial question. Now, I love Sherry Shepherd. She has her own podcast. It's called Two Funny Mamas. And today they were discussing how men don't put the toilet seat down for women that live in the house. Now, they were two women, so they had their side of it. And we're going to ask our guests about this later on, but right now they're muted, so this could be an all-male discussion right now. But I feel like it should be 50-50. Like, we don't ever talk about women leaving the toilet seat up for us. Like, why can't it be 50-50? Now, do you agree with me, or do you disagree? What do you say?
Well, since there's women on the panel, I'm going to disagree a little bit, because for the most part, when women use the restroom, the toilet seat is down. They put it back down. For guys, we don't do that. We just leave it up and we just keep going and wash our hands and we leave. That's it. But I'm not getting
it. I just feel this would be 50-50. I believe that if, you know, I'm okay with putting it down, but why not also leave it up? I just don't see the difference. So on that note, we're gonna bring the women in here. We have joining us again from her just highly rated debut in our podcast, Sarah Matlock. Sarah, how are you doing today?
Wonderful. How are you?
I'm great. Looking forward to you making me laugh today. So get ready for that. And I'm gonna let you, Sarah, introduce our special guest, who's a friend of yours. You want to introduce your guest?
I'm always in charge of introductions. you put me on the spot. I won't be mentioning age, but we've known each other since 1979 when our fathers played on the We Are Family World Series team, the Pittsburgh Pirates. She is the daughter of one of the most famous, greatest baseball players that ever lived, and she can tell you his stats, but I will tell you she means a lot to me. Her father is Willie Stargell, and I brought to you today Kelly Stargell.
Thank you. Hey,
Kelly, how's it going? Kelly, how are you?
I'm good, and I'm not great with stats.
Well, luckily, I actually have them right in front of me, and you can correct me if I'm wrong. I got this from Wikipedia, but I'm going to read these real quick, we're going to ask you all about our topic that we just talked about. To see if you agree with me or David. But career highlights for Willie Stargell, 7-time All-Star, 2-time World Series champion in 71 and 79, National League MVP in 79, World Series MVP in 79, NLCS MVP in 79, the Clemente Award winner in 74, good God, 2-time National League home run leader in 71 and 73, National League RBI leader in 73, and his jersey is retired by the Pittsburgh Pirates. Did I miss anything, Kelly?
Oh, Father.
Father, yes. Father, yes, yes. So before we get into talking about you all with you all, let's talk about the topic from earlier today. So I saw this on a podcast that I watched this morning. I love, by the way, if you like Sherri Shepherd and Kim Whitley, you got to check out their podcast, Two Funny Mamas. But we'll start with you, Sarah. What do you think about me? My suggestion that I'm okay with leaving the seat down, I think it should be 50-50. Also should leave it up. If it's two in the house, you know, do it for each other. What do you think, Sarah?
I think you're absolutely wrong. I'm like, are you serious right now? I mean, is chivalry dead? You guys open doors, leave the toilet seat down. There's no way that we should have to be putting it up. You guys don't have a threat of falling in. You shouldn't leave it up. And besides that, you guys had bad aim. So clean it off. Keep it shut. Let's keep it. And it doesn't look right. Okay. So, yeah.
Preach.
I can't believe we're having this conversation.
You can't leave it until I get hired for that.
Wow. Exactly. Let's hear Kelly, my sister, what do you think?
That's what I was saying. We can't leave this conversation until I get my input. You better put that seat down. Listen, I wouldn't mind if you put the whole seat down. If you just had to, you know, put it, you wanted to do 50-50, put it all the way down. Put all the seats down. And I don't mind lifting the first one up. The second one, that's not my business.
Okay. So you're saying, I like you. So you're saying compromise. You're saying leave one of the two down.
Yeah, put it all the way, both of them down. Okay. Or don't go to that bathroom. Go to a different one.
Go to the one at the bathroom.
Go to the other one.
Okay. I agree. That's okay. Perfect.
I just thought it was 2021 and we were just, you know,
no, what?
Yeah, no. Anyway. You got it right.
You're not gonna win that conversation, bro.
All right. So let's talk. First of all, Kelly, do you cook?
Yes.
Okay. I'm a cooker. Now, what are some things that you like to cook?
Besides popcorn.
I like popcorn.
The shade.
Sorry. You know what I like to cook? I'm a one pot chick. So, however, it's not one pot. I'll make a big casserole. So I might put chicken and beef in it, chop it up and put some zucchini and onions and garlic. And I cook it all separately, put it all in the pan and then bake it. Maybe I don't normally put cheese on top because if it's so much of it, cheese doesn't heat up well. So I'll put cheese, you cheese it as you choose the cheese. And then so those type of things, like either sausage and noodles, but those are so fattening. And I learned that over COVID. As I was entering my chop championship world. I'm like coming in the kitchen like, what are we going to do today? Whoa, I had to slow down. Like, all right, I'm not cooking breakfast, lunch, and dinner. I'll do dinner. Y'all can figure it out for breakfast and lunch. So, yeah, I like to cook.
And we're not going to go down this road again with Sarah. But now, so do you, now, Kelly, do you know about Sarah's cooking situation or no?
I do not know. This is all. I'll help Sarah in anything I can do.
Well, yeah. So I'm gonna let Sarah tell you. But before she does, I'm going to mute my mic because the last time she had me on the floor laughing. So Sarah, why don't you fill Kelly on what you discussed with us last time?
I shared with them my unique talent of perfecting. Well, don't laugh. You're already laughing. Oh, come on now, of cooking popcorn. I am really good at that. Because the first time I thought it was a trick question, so I thought that my dad got to them or something, because the one thing he always says, I can do, and he even told my boyfriend this, he was just like, oh, popcorn, she can do. He's just like, anything else? No. You know, and I have perfected that. And then I told him my philosophy on cooking, which is in my household, and you can ask my daughter, that I cook by chance. There's a chance it may be good, and this detention may be bad. And as long as you're good with that, you can survive in my house.
Funny.
But I make I make excellent reservations, so it doesn't matter. I know how to order.
You're quite the orderer.
Like you know, DoorDash, whatever, delivery, whatever. So
if it helps, when I went through college late in life.
Yes. But
for those 3 years that I finished my bachelor's degree, I don't think I cooked one meal. I mean, I was coming home like, boom, bon appetit. Y'all get at it.
Yeah, but it's a shame because my mom was such a great cook. No.
Yes.
That's a chance.
Yes. Let's talk a little bit about some baseball. Willie Stargell. Let me ask you this question, and David and I will go back and forth. But at what point did you realize that your dad was like the Willie Stargell? Like, was there a certain point that you realized, like, oh wow, he's not just my dad. I'm sharing it, like he is. Like,
there. So let's see. Yes, I cannot pinpoint it because I was born. When I was born, he was 8 years into his game. Like, I was born in, sorry, Sarah. I was born in 69. And he played with 62. So he was already into baseball. That was already part of my life. So the whole lifestyle thing, it was nothing different. Like, we didn't come into this lifestyle as when I was 4 or 5. It was already what we did every day. So let me think. But I can't remember, maybe because in Pittsburgh, he's known everywhere, you know? So in Pittsburgh, wherever you go, whatever we do. And I went to a private school. So nobody was too troubly phased over who my dad was because their dad was somebody too. So it wasn't like, oh, so I cannot remember. Maybe it was during Little League. When for my brother, his Little League teams, and when my dad would come and everybody would just flock around them, and it was just kind of like, what did you do? Why is everybody looking for you, Daddy? What's going on? You know, and when we go to the games, it wasn't a huge deal either because it was like he's at work. You know, and everybody is always here at work to cheer him on and happy for him. So he got a lot of friends. So, yeah, I did notice it at some point. I can't really pinpoint when it is, but it was just, it might have been a lot older in life as I realized how much bigger he really was outside of Pittsburgh. So.
So is there a moment that specifically sticks out to you, a proud moment or a moment that not so proud or anything that just comes like right to your mind that sticks out?
I think this was 1982. I'm almost positive it was when he was retiring. And it was a ceremony where I don't think it was the final ceremony, but maybe he was announcing it to everybody. And we were in California in LA for the summer. And my mom's like, hey, we have to go home tomorrow and then we can come back the next day after that to LA. And I'm like, well, why do we have to leave LA and go home and then come back? Like, she wouldn't tell me what it was. But when we got there, you know, I don't know how, if we were doing it, if the Pirates did it, I just know we were summoned to Pittsburgh and it was him, his like announcement of retirement. And it was, we went up on the stage. I guess he announced it. Ronald Reagan called him and it was something at the stadium or like they did, the stage was at like on the pitcher's mound. Right over there. So, and it was before the game, but they never took that kind of time out for an individual player before the game, the big announcement and all this. It might be a little something real quick at, you know, seventh and stretch, a quick announcement and you move on, but it was a whole big production and he cried. He had his little towel on him because it was before the game. So he had his whole uniform on And he got up there and he was just feeling himself. And I'm like, oh, look at you, daddy. I'm so happy for, you know, really happy for him, for his, you know, it was the end of his career. And I didn't know he would cry. You know, he's not the crying type. So I was like, wow, in front of all these people, you good? So that was, I would say that point.
And let me tell you this real quick before Frank jumps back in. He made me cry a lot of days because he was a prayer.
I'm sorry.
Maybe about, 8 or 9 years old. And this guy was just amazing. I was like, he just destroyed the Cubs every single time. And I just couldn't stand it. I couldn't even watch it anymore.
Well, we can be mad at him too. I'm okay with that. But not for long.
No.
Yeah, that's funny.
So if you just joined the podcast, today's your first day with us. We have Sarah Matlock, who is the daughter of Bill Matlock, and Kelly Stargell, who is the daughter of Willie Stargell. And also check out our previous episode with Sarah. But don't eat or drink because you will be choking out of laughter. It's the most talked about podcast that we've done so far. But Sarah, I don't think we ever asked you, was there a point when you realized that your father was like larger than life? Like, do you remember the point or at some point when you realized, oh, wow, he's somebody. He's bigger than, he's just more than his dad.
yeah, I was thinking about that when Kelly said that. I was trying to think, was there a distinct moment? I think, you know, when he started playing for the Cubs, I was 4, 5, and 6, and then he went on to the Giants, and I was aware that he played baseball. I knew what he did, you know, but like you said, it's like daddy going to work. And then it wasn't until he went from the Giants to the Pirates, where I knew he was good, put it that way. I always knew he was really good because of the way he was treated. But then when we got on the Pirates and the team and the family, and my dad just adored Willie, and they were, I mean, the whole team was close, but his relationship with Willie Stargell, when I would see people react to the both of them and then react, you know, because my dad was named a captain after Willie, and the way, you know, that people reacted and the way they accepted my dad. And then, you know, like Kelly said, going to the stadium wasn't unusual to see 15 banners in the outfield hanging over the wall that said Mad Dog Stargell. You know, it was just our life, you know, it wasn't unusual to have thousands of people cheering them on all the time because we were into our own girl talk doing whatever we wanted to do. But I think that's when I started to realize like how good he really was. But as far as outside the picture in like Kelly stated, to realize how much they affected the game of baseball outside of your area, when you travel to different states and different places and they hear your name and then they start to react to it, and even out of the country, that's when I started to realize. And I think after my dad played for the Dodgers, we moved back to Chicago. And of course, people knew, you know, he was playing for the Dodgers. When we moved back to Chicago, he was playing for the Detroit Tigers. But I couldn't say my last name in Chicago without someone reacting somewhere, you know, and going other places. And then the tears and the emotion that would come out of people that I've met over the years, that's when I was like, wow. Mm-hmm. And then I really started to realize, like, wow. You know, and then when I read things and it's like, oh, he was the first one in history to do this, the 11th player to do that. That's sort of, you know, just like with Kelly, you know, you read the stats and you read stories and articles. And I think Kelly probably feels the same way. We as children of these men that were so great, you find out a lot of your facts through an article or someone tells you, because you don't really know sometimes the brothers do know more stats and whatever, but you learn a lot from other people, you know, and they, you know, because most of the time it's like you go to school, you have your dad, he comes home, you play with them, you know, they're training, they're doing their job. And after a while, that my dad has been retired for this long and we still travel and he comes to Chicago all the time to sign autographs for the Cubs and do that, that people react to him as if he got off the field yesterday, that means a lot. And so that's, I think, almost more so after he retired is when I realized, but I did know he was really good. I did know, I was very aware. But I just knew when we moved from, you know, state to state that he was going to be in the starting lineup. But what it meant in the big picture of the history of baseball, it took me a while.
All right. So that, yes, go ahead, David.
I'm sorry. Did you guys like travel a lot with your dads like during the season?
Kelly, you want to go first?
Sure. We didn't travel during the season. We traveled spring training. That was pretty much it. And we would go to California in the summer because he's from California. So I go to my grandmother's in Oakland and I go to Doc Ellis' house in L.A. It was like his BFF.
Yeah.
Doc. And well, it wasn't his house. It was Aunt Paula's house. So we go to Aunt Paula and Sean Galace's house and stay with them between the two summers and over the summer and meet up with either my dad, probably in either L.A. or Oakland. And if he was in town at that point. But yeah, pretty much the only travel was to spring training. I'm trying to think if it was anything, it might be little stuff, but off season and not directly, you know, baseball related.
Yeah. And for us, the main trip of the year was definitely spring training. That was like, you couldn't wait for spring training. Besides that, when almost the same as Kelly, when the Pirates, they do the West Coast trip, they're gone for a couple weeks or whatever. They, you know, they're gone. They hit all the spots out there. So that's the trip we would take. And we enjoy taking the trips to California. The only other one that we would be an intentional, like planned thing was going to Cincinnati because we wanted to see Pete Rose. My brothers would stay at his ex-wife's house with his son, Petey. And then my mom and I would stay at the hotel with the team. And then when Dave Parker was there as well, his family is all from Cincinnati. So my dad's sister married his brother. So we're all one big happy family. So between the Roses and the Parkers in California, those were the main trips. And once in a while, we'd go to St. Louis or something. But most of the best travel, I would have to say, was spring training.
When my dad traveled, he would bring us stuff back from the different cities. So I think it was St. Louis, his shoe spot. Someplace in St. Louis, he would come back. We'd each have a big old box filled with shoes. I'm like, okay, that's when you're watching the calendar, is when are my things coming?
So back in February, we had all the players on, Bill Matlock and Andre Dawson and Frederick Jenkins. And one of the questions we asked them was about racism during their playing days. And I'm curious, Kelly, did your father ever talk to you about racism that he may have experienced? Did you see any of it at all? Or just curious as to what you may or may not know about racism in baseball with your father.
So, yeah, he did talk about it, not a lot. I know he told me one story. He was he traveled with the team, but he didn't travel with the team. He stayed on, you know, and with people, you know, the team stayed in hotels. He stayed in the hood. So wherever we go, when we were growing up, he always gravitated to the hood. And that, you know, because that's where it's safe at, I guess, you know. So we would, he said one time where he had to stay at was like a 10 yard, you know, like the yard, put your lawnmower in, whatever. It was like a 10-foot box. And it was 10, T-I-N. And he said when he laid down in it, his head touched the one side, his feet touched the bottom. And, you know, so it's already hot and it's metal. And he said it was so hot in there. I know that he woke up once with a shotgun to his head, telling him, N-I-G-G, don't go on that field. And but he still went. Personally, you know, when we move on, you know, get through the 60s, the 50s and the 60s, and we get to where I'm able to understand, you know, what's going on. I don't know. He may have experienced it, you know, on a different level. To me, I think that more so the way I feel like it was experienced in my view is that if we went somewhere as a family on Saturday, and then maybe he said, you know what, let's order some of that. Let's, you know, go pick it up. So we go pick it up and I go into the building to get it the next day or, you know, a week later. And the people don't recognize you. And the service is so much different when your dad's not around. So it just leads you to know that, oh, it's, you know, this is just a smoke and mirror. We come in here and they're just, hey, oh my God, it's throwing out red carpets and, you know, come back 2 hours later by yourself. There's no more red carpet and nobody remembers you. And, you know, so that's the, you know, the, I don't know how to call that racism, but you see a difference in how you would be treated with or without your special toy, you know? Also, you know, just the fact that, where he had to stay, just staying with friends, a lot of his longtime friends or people he's known in Pittsburgh over the years were people who helped him when he couldn't make his way. Not that he couldn't make his way, but people he knew he could trust. So he made those type of friendships and people who were like, you got a place, you're comfortable, you stay here, you know, until he started moving up and getting a family with, you know, having his family. So I think he did definitely experience it. He did talk about it. I'm sure there was way more than what I ever heard about, but it's definitely was there for him.
Now, last month, I had a chance to talk to Sarah's brothers, and I was just curious. I asked them, you know, with Sarah being female, the daughter, and you all being the boys, was that the father, that the athlete, that the she is spoiled, you know, was that daddy's girl, or, you know, or were you all spoiled? And they said to just ask her where she lives at. So I guess the answer is that daddy's, you know, they spoil their girl. So I'm just curious, do you have any siblings? And if so, does it also ring true with you? Do baseball dads, you know, spoil their girls?
Girl dad, hashtag girl dad. There is, I'm the baby. I'm the baby and always need to be picked up. So I'm not spoiled though. But you got to take care of me first or it's a problem. No, there's five of us. So I'm the youngest of five. And my poor brother, he's the only boy. Bless his heart. I think he had a bad experience. So yeah, there's Wendy, she's the oldest, Precious, Don, Willie Jr., and me. And yeah, he loves on everybody. That's the cool thing about it. When we are all together, it's just a big love fest. Christmas, we saw the last person who ever got picked up at the airport. We'd stop at the liquor store. And we'd come home and we would barricade ourselves in the house. Like we had food, we had liquor, and it would just be us in the house for like a week. We would just be eating and drinking and jolly, until it was time for Christmas shopping. Then we'd go tear up the stores.
Now, are there certain players, and I'll ask this to Sarah, I'll let you go first, Kelly. Are there certain players that, still stay in touch with the family that you played with, or baseball players in general? Are there players that still stay in touch with the family? And if you tell us, if so, you know, who they are, and then we'll go to Sarah about some of the players.
Particularly from the Pirates or any team?
Any team, any.
With my father, yes. The one from the Pirates that he recently kept the most in touch with on a consistent basis was Grant Jackson, who just passed away. That was someone that he, you know, regular phone calls. But, you know, Mike Easler, Pete Rose, Andre Dawson, Billy Williams, let's see, who else is on my dad's list? Players, I'm just drawing a blank. Andre, Billy, oh, Fergie. I was like, how did I forget Fergie? And my dad was, you know, when Ernie was around, my dad was close to Ernie. Ernie, you know, sort of played like a father figure. But then there's over the years, Phil Garner, who was also with the family, with the Pirates, he had kept in touch. And I think they're still in Texas, but when he was the manager for the Detroit Tigers, and I don't know which years he started, but he brought my dad in 2000, 2001 to be the hitting coach for the Detroit Tigers. And that's just the relationship they have. My dad, the ones, you know, that I hear the most from are the ones that I just mentioned, as far as guys that were around then. And then I know he did an interview, you know, about like Hank Aaron and like McCovey, those type, you know, those names that he was friends with over the years, but I don't know those people. I know whenever over the years when we'd see them, it'd be one of those things where you could tell they just kept that connection, you know, whether it's just sharing, whether he played with them or just played against them or they pitched against them, that and Vida Blue. And then, of course, when Willie was still with us, that was like the highlight, you know. I went a couple times back to Pittsburgh for all-star games and things like that and the events, and that was just, I mean, they, I don't know, they looked like two gushy like men, just so happy to share the love and be around each other.
Well, my dad passed away in 2001. Actually, April 9th will be his 20-year anniversary of his death. So since then, who he kept up with mostly, I'm not sure. I mean, I know a lot of the Pirates from that 79 team and through the years, whether 79 or from 62 on, he had different friends. He had a lot of friends, people who I have seen, like Manny Sankian. I haven't seen your dad, but you guys kind of went, you guys are across the state, the United States.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, we keep up, you know, through Facebook. A lot of different fellas, Manny, Al Oliver.
Oh, I forgot about him. Yeah, him too.
Mm-hmm. Grant, recently Grant Jackson, Omar Marino. So those are some of the people who I still keep up with. And hey, we're Facebook buddies and friends with their children. So, and who else? Oh, John Candelaria. He's also,
I was just about to say that too.
He's always really cool about keeping up. I'm trying to think if I missed anybody, which I'm sure I am, but there's a
Kent to Colby.
But yeah, he knew so many people, and I have no idea who he kept up with. I just know one time Doc Ellis was trying to catch him. They were, when Doc came to the Pirates initially, they were roommates way back and whenever. So that's how they were like their first friends for each other. And, but he kept calling, looking for him. He couldn't find him once. And he was like, where's your dad at? I've been looking for him everywhere. And I'm like, he's like, you better tell me where he's at. I'm on my way up there. So yeah, he's, lots of folks are missed too.
Right. Oh yeah. Tommy Lasorda was always kept up with my dad.
Did it only stop with baseball? I know, like nowadays, LeBron James is friends with baseball players and hockey players. Like, did you all ever get to, did your fathers hang around or introduce you to like people from other sports, or did it just stick to baseball?
So,
yeah.
In Pittsburgh, growing up, my dad used to do a bowling tournament. So once a year, it was always an all-star roster. So I can remember meeting like Lynn Swann, Franco Harris, Reggie Jackson. I'm sorry, that's back in baseball. Who else? I cannot even tell you the names because every year there would be, it was a whole weekend event. It was Friday night, Saturday. Friday night was the bowling, or maybe Saturday night was bowling. Friday was parties, and then they partied all night. So they did a breakfast buffet at like 4 in the morning when it was over. And then we fell out Sunday And I think I didn't have to go to school Friday. So that was the main thing. I cared nothing else. No school Friday. So yeah, every year, I forget how many there were, but there would always be a big list, a baseball, golf, football, bowlers, maybe 20 different athletes would come in with local celebrities.
Yeah. And for me, my dad, same thing. Well, that's how I got my first football crush was Terry Bradshaw. Never forget going and my dad introduced me to him when I was a teenager and I was like, oh my goodness. Terry Bradshaw, Lynn Swan. My dad was friends with wrestlers and when we lived in LA, I was busy being a teenager and I was walking out the house and I bumped into this man and all I knew was that he was extremely tall. That's all I knew. I didn't really pay attention. I was doing my thing. And it turned out it was Andre the Giant.
Oh, wow. Wow.
So I get home the next, later that day or whatever, my brother, the next morning, my brother was talking and he's like, I can't believe that. And I was just sort of looking around. I was like, oh yeah, your dad brought Andre the Giant to the house yesterday. I was like, wait, that's who I ran into?
Wow.
Yeah, but I mean, gosh, a variety of football players. Tony Dorsett. Basketball players, Jeremy Roenick, is he a hockey player? Who's Jeremy Roenick?
Yes, hockey.
Hockey, yeah. And him, and then my dad's good friends at Magic Johnson, because that's somebody he still keeps in contact with. But I remember when my dad played for the Dodgers, he took me to this first Lakers game, and it was floor seats, and we're walking, and I'd never seen them that close. I didn't realize, I knew they were tall, but it was like, oh my gosh, like seeing Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and Magic made my dad look like an ant. And he came and he jumped on he's in uniform. They're practicing before the game started. And he just jumped on my dad's back and hugged him, you know? And I was like, whoa. And I was like, okay, now I'm impressed. You know, but just different, countless number of football players. I can't even think of all of them. And plus, it's like they go to, my dad participates in a lot of these celebrity golf tournaments. So between golfers and actors and, you know, football players. And then the Fanatics, they do the autograph thing at the Stevenson Convention Center? In Rosemont or... where is that, Schaumburg or something?
It's Rosemont.
Okay, yeah. They that's last time I saw Magic was actually there, but it's baseball players, football players, hockey players, you know, and they're all there. And my dad seems to pretty much know I've met a lot. I just can't name them all. Mm-hmm. And they seem somehow, I think, just traveling and doing what they do with personal appearances, they get to know each other if they didn't know them before.
So question for the ladies, who is your favorite baseball player from back in your dad's era? Besides your dad's, of course.
I still see my daddy.
Outside of your dad, who is your favorite player outside of your dad?
So I didn't get to watch him, but Roberto Clemente, he was... I always say that he had the juice. And sadly, when he passed away, my dad got an opportunity to shine. But, he ran good. He just had that great energy, like Jackrabbit. And so I liked his work ethic. And I really hate that he passed away. But what he was doing... That was crazy. He was really trying to help others. And so that's another piece, you know, and off the field goodness about him.
I'm trying to think of my favorite player. I know my brother's their favorite player was Dave Parker. And their friends used to, because they loved the Cobra. And their friends used to laugh. My friends thought it was funny. They're like, but your dad's still Mad Dog, you know, dad's Mad Dog. you live with him. Why do you like Dave Parker so much? They love him. Gosh, I'm trying to think. My player growing up, it changed when I was younger. I was a big Jose Cardinal and Manny Trio fans. Like those two were great. Manny Trio honestly had nothing to do with how he played. He just looked like a prince to me. So that's all I had to do with. But I would have to say all the guys, I don't think I've watched better baseball than watching the 79 Pirates. I can't say like one particular one. They were all so unique and all so talented. And just when you thought one was great, and then one is just better than the next, and they share that talent. And there was no ego involved. They knew they did what they did. They were there to do a job. They did it well, and they did it together. And and I think the team as a whole. Kentucky sticks out to me just because of his arm, the rubber band man, the way he did. But honestly, that whole team, I'd have to say that group are my favorite, including my dad.
You know what, hey Sarah, you know what's funny? Like when I used to watch Kent Sekove pitch, I used to always like complain and say he was cheating because he used to have that long underarm. I'm like, this dude, what is he doing? Like, it was just wild. He was pretty good though.
He's working.
Because being in Three River Stadium, I mean, one of my favorite things were the theme songs that they would play when some of the pitchers came out. They play the Rubber Band Man when he would come out. You knew there was some intense baseball going on when he had to come out.
Right.
And that throw, I mean, that arm, I loved it.
So, Kelly, I know Sarah has mentioned this previously to me, but do the children of, you know, famous, above average, like superstar baseball players, do you all get together? How do you all stay in touch? And like, what are some of the other player kids that you communicate with?
So we have not gotten together in probably since we left baseball, you know, so it's been so long. Now, thank God for Facebook and, you know, the modern era, because we get to, you know, somebody's name pops up and you're like, oh my gosh. So, you know, we become friends that way and we can kind of stay, you know, connected. And if we need anything, we can reach right out. And it's just like yesterday, whenever we do connect or have to connect, it's never like, oh, it's her. You know, it's like, oh my God, you can't get to the phone fast enough. So it's always amazing to be able to connect with any of my Pirate brothers and sisters. At the tournament, the golf tournament, my stepmom, she used to have or has, I used to run into Roberto and Luis Clemente a lot. So I used to see them pretty regularly. And then just over the phone, like Sarah, Yolanda and Debbie Jackson, Kelly Robinson, Lorraine Marino, Tamara Bibby, I think it's Danielle Robinson. We're just getting to know her. And trying to think of who else, if there's anyone else. I think that's
it. Out here I have Misty Easler, the hitman's daughter.
Yes.
So, mm-hmm. Yeah, so I actually see her, but not since COVID, but, you know, since we don't live that far from each other.
I just wanted to ask Kelly real quick, and then I'll let you jump back in. So I just wanted to be on the right track with the Roberto Clemente thing. He actually died in a plane crash, delivering supplies back home, right?
Yes.
Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure we
knew it. Yes.
You brought up the thing about him being like, you know, bigger than baseball, you know, doing other things to help his family and people back home. I think it was very important to highlight that.
Mm-hmm. It was, I think, a hurricane where he's from, and he was loaded up his plane. He collected all the supplies and was on his way to deliver those supplies to bring relief. And then the plane went down. So I think it was New Year's Eve.
Wow.
So, yeah. So he was doing a really great job, I thought. It's amazing work.
Yeah, and I just think it's like really important to like highlight people like that, because they think it's all about sports and being famous and being a celebrity. But when you got guys like that that try to do things off the field to try to distinguish, like make a difference, separate themselves between the fame and just being an everyday person.
Mm-hmm.
When they get somewhere, they're helping other people and their families. It's just, you know, I think it's just important to highlight things like that.
Right. That's huge. Because nobody asked him to go do it. He exactly. did it. He wanted to do it. And he spearheaded. And it was in 1970. So it wasn't even like it was in 2021 where, you know, had all this extra money to, you know, it was a budget. We worked on a tight budget back in the day. It was a different stream of funds.
I need to write these names down so I can add these names to Sarah's list for me. because that would be a good session to talk about that. But as I was saying, I know how it is now when you win the World Series and you win MVP, you know, you get cars and you get trophies and you get rings and you get money. So for the both of you, and we can start with Sarah and then we'll try to go. For the both of you, you know, because your dads have won so much stuff, you know, where are those like trophies and things, or is it different now? Oh, I'm sure it's different. They might not have gotten cars and endorsements like they do now, but where are some of the trophies and memorabilia? And do you all have any?
I have most of my dad's jerseys, that type of thing. I've had him sign a lot of it. I have his bats. I don't know where they're at, because I keep at, you know, the first two silver bats were actually silver, and then the other ones were plate. The last MLB got a little skimpy on the money, and the last ones are plated. But I was like, I don't care. I'm the firstborn. I get one of those solid silver. He won't tell me where they are. So I don't know where those are. And I don't know, because I don't know if you guys had it too, the actual World Series trophy from the Pirates. We had it displayed in our house. And I hadn't seen it since my dad moved to Vegas from, you know, when we were in Chicago. So I don't know where that is, but I know he has his ring. Most guys keep their rings on them. And besides that, I have certain issued baseball bats. I have a couple of baseball bats of his, and the Cooperstown, what was it? Not 2020 and 2019. They made a special edition Cooperstown baseball, Bill Madrock baseball bat, but they put his image on it. Okay. And I got the third one. They made, I don't even know how many, but they gave me the certificate. My dad gave it to me as a present, because he knows not to like show me things or wear something new around me, because anytime he has a new hat, he has something in his closet, or if I see a new picture of him, I'm like, okay, I'm taking this. He's like, no, you're not, it's mine. I'm like, not anymore. I have the most out of all of kids as far as his things. And I can't wait to get my hands on more.
For me, I have one interesting thing in 1979. He did win the MVP, but he was co-MVP. So he wasn't in. That was the asterisk for me, because it was a white guy.
Yeah. Like,
their team didn't win the World right. Series. Is that right? That's what I remember thinking. Is that right? I don't think that's. But anyway, he's the only person I know who was a co-MVP. And he got a Corvette. He got a whole Corvette for a co-MVP. So I thought, shouldn't you guys flip the Corvette then? So that's one thing. He's gotten many, many, many trophies and all types of great things. However, my dad's stepwife or widow in 2017, she up and sold everything. So she put on auction. She didn't ask anybody. She didn't, you know, there's lots of us, five kids, grandkids, nobody. She didn't confront anybody or offer anybody anything. So pretty much it's all sold on auction block somewhere in the world. Somebody has some.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, I mean, I have just stuff that over the years I've collected. I have his charm necklace. It's an 8. So in a gold medallion. And I have a Leroy Neiman, but we all have one of those.
Right. Leroy Neiman was the man. Yes.
Yeah. He gave us all our originals. So stuff like that. We have stuff like that. But as for the big plaques and things like that. And actually, we when my stepmom sold everything, we did do a GoFundMe and we were able to raise, I don't know, maybe like $2,300. And we got one of his plaques.
And, oh, good.
Yeah. And I can't think of it, but what it stands, it's about integrity. And it's a trophy that he wins. And if I get a second, I'll try to look it up. But it's where it was the people, your peers vote you in. What is that award called? I can't think of it. It's silver.
Yeah, Clemente Award? No. Clemente Award?
Silver Slugger, maybe?
No, I can't think of what it is. I cannot think of what it is. But I have a picture of it. I'll have to try to pull it up. But that it's ironic that we did get that. We were able to get that one, and I was pretty excited. So we did a GoFundMe, and we raised, and our friends all contributed the $2,300 for us to purchase one thing back, you know, so purchase something. So we bid on it, and we won. So that's a small win. I'll take it.
Yeah. Isn't it crazy when you have to, like, purchase something back? My dad did a move, and lo and behold, he was, moving to Connecticut at the time years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the trucks that had most of his memorabilia just happened to go missing. And we ended up, like, seeing things. And I was people told me, and I was like, he earned those things and he won those things, but yet the thousands of dollars they were asking for it, it's like we never got any of that back, you know. But they didn't put a lot. They didn't put a lot up for sale. But still, I mean, some of his things did get stolen from a moving company.
That's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, people don't mind borrowing off of you.
Not at all.
To be honest with you, I grew up with it all in my house. So if she wanted to sell it, it's like, we had it already, took it out, gave it to you and my parents. So it's okay. At the end of the day, I'm going to survive it.
Exactly.
I'm on high pursuit of this picture on my phone right now of the award.
While you're doing that, I'm going to let David ask the last question and we'll come back. Go ahead, David.
Okay.
So yeah, this is for you, Kelly. I just wanted to give you the floor for the last segment, last question. Any final remarks regarding your dad? Anything that you want to highlight about your dad? I think you pretty much covered it all, but if there's anything else that you want to add to that?
The Fred Hudgens Award. That's the one we bought back as a family with our GoFundMe.
Nice.
So that's it. So my dad, funniest man in town, if you ask me. He was laid back and cool. And he never, 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 ever wanted to be noticed. And he just wanted to be Willie, you know, quietly. However, he would wear a pirate hat and a Stargell jersey. No, but he would be like, you know, trying to be it, you know, just to himself and totally forgetting that you have on everything you got on your two rings. Like you said, they always typically have their ring. So he has his, and he also has a Brave ring. So when he left Pittsburgh, he went to Atlanta to be a first base coach. And there he was a first base coach. And he ended up going to the minor leagues for the Braves. He was the minor league director. And he had his hand. He was there for like 10 years and he was in charge of bringing people up. So I remember, I think when my dad turned 50, he had his birthday party. We had a 50th birthday party for him in spring training. And there was Deion Sanders, his first year playing baseball. And, you know, and everybody was like, "Ooh, Deion Sanders." And there he was. And I'm like, he's okay. So I'm like, oh, my dad's Willie Stargell.
Right?
But yeah. So just he was a really cool guy. As a person, he was super cool. I mean, he was for the little person. And he was just as, you know, he wasn't, he didn't grow up in a time where there was an abundance of money or excess. So when he grew up, he moved ice with the ice picks for the refrigerators when he was a young man. And, you know, and so just doing simple living life, easy, fireplace, go outside, do simple stuff. So as a person, he was okay with me. He was a good dude. I liked him. I love him, miss him. And I wish that outside of baseball, if he could have really been, you know, if they could have took in his personality as well, that would have been cool. Everybody would have enjoyed him even more. So he loved baseball too. But the other thing, he said that when he was growing up, he would just have a stick and a rock, and he would go everywhere and just hit his stick and hit his rock, and he would catch. And that was all he did, coming and going wherever he went. And I always hear about find something you love, do what you love. And, you know, that's your passion. He loved it. He liked catching and playing and the whole aspect of the game. And even from youth till he got older. So I knew he was really sick and probably soon to die because he stopped watching SportsCenter. You know, I don't know what's up with men in SportsCenter. And it's like, it's on every hour, right? Ain't it the same thing? They don't change the format till noon. Am I right or am I wrong? They're noon,
you are right.
6, and then midnight again. You can stop at some point. I can't believe it just rolls all day. And he just, I'm like, Dad, I'm gonna tell you what's going on. Ain't nothing changed. So when he wasn't worried about SportsCenter being on every TV, you know, and I'm like, you want me to put SportsCenter on? He's like, it doesn't matter. I'm like, oh my God, you know? But SportsCenter is a gauge for how people's men's health is.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So definitely the measure of thick, I tell you.
Definitely.
Yes. Fortunately, David and I have to go to a 35 degree baseball game in the morning. So we are going to wrap it right here so that we can pray for good health tomorrow. But
Michael windshield.
Yeah, oh, I forgot about the windshield in the game tomorrow. Yeah. So I think it's gonna be 35 degrees, but feel like 20 degrees. So this should be fun at the ballpark tomorrow. But Sarah, once again, thank you very much for a great podcast and allowing me to add more names to my list.
You're very welcome, and thank you for having me again. And Kelly, I love you, and thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate you guys. It was a good time. Appreciate it.
Yes. So again, we were talking to Sarah Madlock and Kelly Stargell, and we will see you all on the next episode of the Mistaken Identity Podcast with David and Frank.
Hey guys, this is Joe Flaherty with the Mistaken Identity Podcast. As always, we want to thank you for listening. If you appreciate the work we're doing here, please drop us a rating, a review, a like, a share, a smoke signal maybe, whatever you can do to help us get the word out, help us keep growing. And of course, as a disclaimer, we want to add once again that the views and opinions expressed in this podcast are solely our own, and we do not speak for or on behalf of the Chicago Cubs or any other organization. Stay safe, and we'll catch you next time.